Hey, y'all. Sam Sanders here. So there are a lot of stories in the news lately about the right to free speech. But most people are surprised to learn where that right exists and where it does not. We get into all of this with the former president of the ACLU. This week on It's Been a Minute from NPR.
From NPR Music, this is Alt Latino. I'm Felix Contreras. This week, we turn on our television to take a deeper dive into a groundbreaking new program that is creatively challenging the status quo with its stars, its themes, and even with the behind-the-camera staff. Vida is on the Starz cable network, and it debuted last month for a limited 6-show season. It's set in Boyle Heights, a longtime working-class Chicano neighborhood in East Los Angeles. Now, the premise is that two estranged sisters are brought together by the death of their mom, Vidalia, or the Vida in the show title. The two left Boyle Heights long ago for different reasons, and through the sisters, the show creatively and dramatically reveals themes like sexual identity, acculturation, sibling rivalries, discrimination, and gentrification. That's when Latinos who left their neighborhood come back and start buying up real estate and opening up small businesses, sometimes pushing out older residents. It's an ensemble drama populated by principally an all-female cast, Latinx actresses who get a chance to shine by playing fully developed characters with depth and nuance, something we don't get to see too often in television or film. What's also notable is that positions behind the scenes are staffed mostly by female Hollywood professionals, from video editors to location managers, casting, production design, and in what's called the room, the writer's room, as well as producers and the all-important showrunner, the producer that keeps it all running smoothly. This week, I'll talk to that showrunner, Tanya Saracho. She took time from her incredibly busy schedule to talk about the show, its themes, and about Latinx characters in general. I'll also talk to NPR television critic Eric Deggans about what he thinks about the show, and I'm going to share a bit of a roundtable conversation about the show from our pals at NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour, a podcast about, well, pop culture. Lots to get to this week. Let's start with my conversation with Tanya Saracho, conducted over the phone from her production office in Hollywood. Okay, Tanya, thanks for being with us here on Alt Latino.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so without giving anything away for people who have not seen it, all right, let me just say that the show is different on a number of levels, okay? On the locale, which is usually just a backdrop for other shows and films, and it usually involves some kind of crime.
Yep.
The characters, there are abuelitas, there are tías, there are Latina lesbians. And then also behind the scenes, your presence as a showrunner, and what I'm reading is predominantly Latina or Latinx writer's room. There's a lot to unpack with this show. So let's start with the uniqueness of the concept. Okay, congratulations, first of all, on getting the show produced. So tell us, what was that pitch meeting like?
Well, they pitched me. Starz pitched me, yeah. I think it matters who pitched me to. The executive at Starz that pitched this to me, her name is Marta Fernandez. So that tells you a lot. That when we are in these spaces, you sort of have to have a champion in there. Because, you know, this took about 2 years plus. So in the sallow moments, in the quiet moments when we were just developing, it was just me with the script, Marta really championed this. And she's the one who pitched me. She said, we have this idea from a production company called Big Beach. They came in and pitched us about chipsters. And she was like, do you know what those are? And I said, yeah, Chicano hipsters, chipsters. And then she said, and gentrification. And I said, whoa, wait, what? Hold on. And I put it together because when you say gentrification, you're like, oh, wait. And the conversation was so interesting. We spoke for a long time about just what that means, that it's, you know, gentrification is the gentrification of a Latinx space by upwardly mobile Latinx and what that meant, you know, and if someone is from the same neighborhood and is coming back and still causes displacement because you're from the same neighborhood, are you still a gentrifier, you know? I thought that had, like we say in Spanish, mucha madera. Like, there was a lot of story you could get out of that. And also, you know, it's not a black and white subject matter because it depends who's telling it. So I thought we could do something. And they also wanted to do something in the Latina millennial space. And they really wanted to touch on the East Side, like you said, in a way that hadn't been seen before. So they pitched it to me. And when we did come to build the room, I got an all Latinx room. And, you know, a lot of my writers are from Boyle Heights, from also from just the East Side, from the area. So in that regard, they were great watchdogs and ambassadors of the area, you know. And we got a consultant, a community liaison, that is an actual activist that wasn't so keen on the show at first. And I love that because, in a way, when you're shooting in the east side of LA with your big production trucks and stuff, you become a gentrifier too. Even if I'm, you know, most of the people are like Latinx, like you're still arriving with your trucks and you're sort of gentrifying for the day.
Okay, so let's take a step back. Let's talk about you as a person, as an individual, and as a television viewer. When you were coming up, what did you watch? What did you enjoy? And were there shows that made you feel like an outsider?
Yeah, so I grew up in Mexico till around 12, 13. So when I was in Mexico, I would watch teen or children's soaps or American shows that were dubbed, but like old school shows. Like, so like when I lived in Santa Rosalia, Baja California, there was like one channel for only like 4 hours or something like that, like in the day. So like, I'm dating myself, but like they had El Gran Chaparral, like what's it called? Bonanza. That's what they would get, Bonanza. Like, I'm that old. Like, and also Knight Rider and that kind of thing, even 10 years after Knight Rider was like a thing. So I grew up watching America through a dubbed mouth, but also telenovelas. You know, when my nana would like put me down and like give me something to knit. So I, because she was too old to play with me. She was like, sit down, learn to knit, watch these soap operas, you know? And then when I came here, it was a matter of like, well, I needed to Americanize myself really fast because they were making fun of my accent. And, you know, at 12, 13, that's when it's, you know, like that bullying is at its worst. So I was really studying great masterpieces such as Saved by the Bell and 90210 because those were teens and they were like close to me in age and I was watching them like, so that's how I need to behave. I need to behave like those little American kids. So it was not so much I was being alienated. It was like I was trying to match something. I was trying to like perform Americanness, you know, through all those Aaron Spelling shows. I was like, oh, so those are Americans, right? They sleep with each other. They never really study. Okay, got it. That's Americanness. You had to sort of find your similarities with characters wherever you could, but you're never fully represented, I felt. You know, as soon as you came, you were like, you have to sort of fit yourself to that dominant mold rather than it ever representing or reflecting your experiences, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when I was a kid, I grew up here in the United States. I've talked about it before. I'm almost 60 years old. You know, I grew up with Brady Bunch, Family Affair, even the Beverly Hillbillies. And I always said to myself, we don't have a big house like that or have a wacky live-in maid, right?
Right.
So, you know, so it's like, why are they different and why am I different?
What's wrong with me that we don't have that, you know? Yeah. You sort of grew up with that, always comparing yourself to the dominant culture.
You know, one of the most fascinating aspects of the series is the use of Spanglish. It's presented in a way that we've all heard either around the kitchen table or hanging out with our friends and family. Now, here's a scene from Vida that's like a Spanglish symphony, beautifully constructed and acted. This one involves Mari, one of the central characters who confronts her dad about his diabetes treatments.
Papa, no fuiste a dialysis?
Hoy no, mija.
What do you mean, hoy no? You know you have to go to get your dialysis today, papá, si no te pones real sick.
Pues, Johnny nunca vino.
What?
Tú me haces otra cita, mija.
No, papá, okay, that'll get you out of your rotation. Usted sabe what the doctor said. Okay, just put your pants back on, voy por Johnny, okay? I'll be right back.
We rarely see Latino characters given the chance to have these kind of complex stories.
That's my colleague, NPR TV critic Eric Deggans.
We've seen these kind of stories with white characters and even with some black characters, but television has been so underrepresentative of Hispanic characters that we don't often get a chance to see these kind of complex stories told where these kind of characters are at the center of it. And not only are these Latino characters, but, you know, several of the characters are gay too. And so that's another subculture that we hardly ever see on television. So it's interesting, like the idea of siblings who were away from home because they felt constricted by home, and they kind of left to find themselves, and then they're forced to come back by the death of a family member, and kind of forced to reconcile how they feel about home. Like, that is a story that we've seen many times, but because it's in this arena that is hardly ever depicted with authenticity on television, it feels very fresh and it feels very different, and that's what I like about this show.
Yeah, the thing about acculturation, that's something that really rings true for me personally and for a lot of people that I know, family members, friends, especially people coming out from California, because the Latino community or because the Mexican American community has been there for so long, there are a number of people who have lost a connection to the language, which one of the sisters apparently has. And another one has a much stronger connection to the language. So these little subtleties of identity come through in the storyline that just has me riveted and fascinated watching it.
Yeah, I mean, there's this great moment in one of the early episodes where the two sisters are, you know, having a meal at a sort of a neighborhood joint, and they're confronted by somebody who lived in the neighborhood who accuses them of being outsiders and is protesting the gentrification of the neighborhood. And, you know, the two sisters are like, hey, you know, we grew up here, but as far as this person who still lives in the neighborhood is concerned, they're not down. and that's interesting, you know. And so the sisters kind of have to deal with the fact that there are people in their neighborhood who feel like they have kind of severed themselves from the culture that they grew up in, and they don't necessarily feel like that or agree with that. And that's a great storyline to kind of play with and see unfold in the show.
Yeah, and the other thing that's also fascinating to me is the use of Spanglish in the show. The kind of Spanglish that I've heard so often, like, is as almost to be like, oh yeah, I guess that is different. It just seems so normal to me. I thought that was amazing. That was an amazing moment on television.
And see, what's great for me as somebody who's not really familiar with that world, I mean, I'm African American, to get a glimpse into what that's like, to just be a fly on the wall and see people relate to each other the way they would when they're relaxed, they're with their people, you know, that's what's the value is for me. And that's what so many television shows have a hard time with, when they don't get people of color to tell their own stories. Mm-hmm. You know, the value of having a showrunner who is Latino or Latinx and having an all Latinx writing staff is that, you know, you have people of color telling their own stories in a way that's very authentic and just feels like you're hanging out with these people in their environment. And you know, you can learn a lot. You know, if you're from that community or you're from that culture, you're familiar with it, it feels very comfortable. For people who are not from it, you learn a lot and you get to experience something that you would likely never be able to experience in quite the same way, in a different way. And that's the value of a show like Vida as well.
I think there's an interesting dichotomy between this family and the one represented on One Day at a Time, the series with Rita Moreno. The One Day at a Time family is Cuban-American, so those are a whole different set of cultural values and cultural storylines. And, of course, this show that we're talking about is Mexican-American. But then there are all these other levels that make them so different. But, again, it reflects the diversity of just within that community that sometimes people consider as a whole, the Latino community. This shows how different night and day the community can be.
Well, I mean, One Day at a Time is a show that's very much about the family. So we don't see them outside of their family unit very often. We don't see them on the street very much, you know. So all that stuff you're talking about, you know, the street cats, you know, we don't get that flavor at all. You know, we don't really know, like, what their life is like if they're out in those environments. It's all, you know, it's within that apartment or occasionally the workplace of the mom. So One Day at a Time is very much about that family, whereas Vida is very much about how the two sisters from this family are interacting with their neighborhood and the people around them and this bar and an apartment building that they suddenly have inherited that they have to figure out what to do with. And so, you know, Vida is more about how the outside environment is affecting these two people, where One Day at a Time is much more about the family. and exploring their dynamics. And you know, one is a single camera filmed like a movie kind of TV show, that's Vita, and then the One Day at a Time is a multi-camera filmed live in front of an audience, like an old school sitcom. So even the styles of how the shows are put together are different. But what's important, like when we were figuring out what we were going to talk about, you know, I sort of talked to you about this. I feel like marginalized groups and how they're represented in media is important, and I almost feel like there's a cycle to how it plays out. And African Americans, I think, are the furthest along this cycle because, you know, we're the most extreme example. And so when people talk or think about diversity, often they just think about us, unfortunately. But, you know, when I see how Hispanic characters are depicted on television, I'm seeing what I saw with Black characters maybe 15 years ago, even 20 years ago, where we have a few shining examples now popping up of shows where people have done a great job of distilling, you know, family units and neighborhoods and people's culture in really interesting shows. And now the time has come to sort of push that further and get, you know, even a wider range of representation, because it's nice to have two shows like Vita and One Day at a Time that are centered on Hispanic characters, but they're very different. That's wonderful. Now we need more of that, you know. And in fact, I think we're going to see more of that, because there are more shows coming on the broadcast networks in the fall and in the next TV season that feature Hispanic characters, including a reboot of Magnum PI and a reboot of Charmed, and a show that looks like it's going to be kind of like a modern version of Cheers on NBC. So, you know, a lot of networks are trying to figure out how to tell these stories.
Telling our own stories. How long have we been hearing that? And really, only now in the 21st century do we really get a chance to experience that somewhat consistently. Vida producer Tanya Saracho has a thing or two to say about that, and she starts by explaining what the two shows have in common, then giving props to one of the showrunners for One Day at a Time, Gloria Calderon-Kellett, and why having her in that position makes a difference.
Yeah, the formats are different. You know, the storytelling is different, but it's they deal with queerness, they deal with class, they deal with a family, like you said, and it's woman-centric. I think there's a lot of similarities between the two shows. And I do think that it matters that Gloria is at the helm of that show. I mean, Gloria and Mike, but that Gloria, in a way, sourcing a lot from her family. You can tell there's a lot of heart. If you compare our shows with other shows that are about Latinx but are not being helmed by Latinas or Latinos, it, you know, you can just tell the difference, you know?
And it's important to distinguish between stories that are told by us.
Exactly.
And stories that are told by other people, for example, like the McFarland,
sure.
USA, about the long-distance runners in McFarland, California, and the cancer cluster and all that. You know, I think
right.
that was a Disney film. And then also even up to Coco last fall. Again, there's a little bit of, there is a theme of Mexican, and in this case, Mexican or Latino culture. It's presented by a big studio, a big film, although there were some, you know, people involved with the production to make sure that it was culturally correct. But still, it's someone else telling our story.
That one got me so much in my heart that I'm like, and Octavio Solis and other writers were involved, that I'm like, they, as best as a movie that big can do it, they got it, you know? Like, they, at best, it's, you know, it, I think there's going to come a time that everyone, like, not everyone, like the people holding the pen to draw and the people holding the pen to write it, and the however that works, like they're all, hopefully will all be Latinx, like, because that is possible. I do think that is possible, you know. But like, I think that is a step in the right direction. Coco being like, okay, we better do this right now. They threw everything in the kitchen sink at it, right? It had all the imagery that we'd earned for so many like decades. It's everything. Throw it. Just put it. Yep. Yep, that Cantinflas, todo, everything, you know? Cantinflas, todo, Jorge Negrete, yes, everything. But it's like, it warmed my heart. It was so, like, lovely. But, like, something, you're right about the, when we don't get to handle our own narratives, you know? Because then it's a version of us, but it's not our version of us. And that there's a danger to that.
Okay, before we continue, I want to drop some knowledge on you about NPR News and how you can stay on top of everything you need to know during these wacky days of nonstop breaking news.
Our Up First team goes to work while you're sleeping. That way you wake up to the freshest take on the day's news. It's the 10-minute morning news podcast from NPR. Listen to Up First on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you, David Green. And now let's go to another clip from the show Vida. This is near the beginning when the older sister Emma arrives to the family apartment to be greeted by her younger sister Lynn and Eddie, her mother's roommate. The tense conversation reflects so many unspoken tensions and reveals one of the underlying themes of the series, the secret life of Vida, or Vidalia, that she kept from her daughters.
Hello.
Hi, Emma, this is Eddie.
She's the one that... she helped Mommy run the bar and was, like, her roommate.
I'm sorry. Vidalia had a roommate.
Hey, it's so good to finally meet you. I mean, not under these circumstances, but all.
Yeah.
I'd gotten a chance to meet Lynn here.
Oh,
she visited.
Is that right?
Yeah. Pero tú me faltabas. Your mamá wouldn't shut up about you.
I doubt that.
And now, let's spend a few minutes with the crew from another NPR podcast, Pop Culture Happy Hour. That would be NPR's Stephen Thompson, Linda Holmes, as well as Daisy Rosario, arts and culture maven from WAMU in Washington, D.C., who starts by explaining why she liked the show. Spoiler alert, there is a plot reveal here, but it won't detract you from appreciating the storyline. It happens early in the first episode.
I really loved this show. I mean, I was just hooked in immediately, not just because there are aspects of it I can relate to, obviously, as like a Latina woman, sure. But more than that, just I love complicated characters.
Yeah.
The reality of the world is that people are not all good or all bad. And I just love the way that this is painted and the way that these characters interact and the way that the world is like slowly shown to you while it's still only being 6.5 hours is pretty masterful. I just was into it immediately.
Yeah, it is an unusual format in that it is a half hour drama. And there aren't that many half hour dramas kicking around. Although, you know, if you look at the structure of, for example, broadcast network drama, that without commercials is going to come in at 42, 43. These, because they're on Stars, are a full, true 30 minutes. So actually, you know, each episode doesn't have that much less than a network drama, but has somewhat less. And I do think that they're like a trimmed down drama episode. And I think it does make them move faster.
I think that's exactly right. And I think when you think about a network drama that's, you know, 41, 42 minutes long, there's a lot of padding in there to get you to the act breaks, and this doesn't have that. So it really does just feel like a lean drama. They're like 31, 32 minutes. The moral center of the show is the wife of the mother who has just died. And her daughters are just in the process of finding out that she has a, quote, roommate.
Who
everybody at home is looking at Eddie and saying, And it takes them a little longer to figure it out. The character of Eddie, a wonderful performance by Sarah Anzoátegui, who provides this grieving quality and this kind of warmth and kindness and decency, but also a lot of jagged edges. That character is not perfect by any means, but I think provides the kind of most human, like relatably human character. And then over time, the characters who revolve around Eddie develop and you find redeeming qualities in them. At first, my only complaint about the show is, man, I don't like anybody.
But I think you're right that as it goes on, you learn more about these people. You learn more about why their grief is so complicated and why their grief for, in the girl's case, their mom, and in Eddie's case, her wife, is so complicated. And one of the interesting things to me is there's been so much talk in pop culture about the trope of the dead queer woman that's come up so often, and it's something that's been so hurtful to so many people. But I do feel like in this show, they've handled this story in a way where you get to see the grief that Eddie feels and the way that she feels a little bit isolated in her grief, but they didn't try to get you attached to the mother character and then kill her. Like, that's the only way to get you roped into the show. Mm-hmm. So they're able to engage grief without gratuitous death and ripping away characters that people have come to be attached to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, in fact, the scene where we do see ever so small amount of the life of this woman, and I think I was even more struck by it because we see so little of it. And as someone who I've had a lot of loss in my life, so grief is actually, I feel like I'm kind of that friend that a lot of people go to because I've had maybe a disproportionate amount for someone my age. And it all just felt so real. Because grief is so not linear. So the fact that we're seeing all the different characters and how they're affected by it in so many different complicated ways and the way that it's playing out in their lives was just so realistic to me.
And now let's get back to my interview with Tanya Saracho. Let's talk a little bit about the business side of it. It's a pretty big step for a cable network like Starz to take a chance on programming like this. And I have to give them, just as a long time television viewer, I have to give them props for taking this step, man. It's a big deal.
Well, from the pitching, they sought this project out, you know? They wanted to make it. I didn't have to go convince them, so that they get double props because they took a chance on an untried first-time showrunner that had only been here 3 years, me, you know? And they were like, you're going to be the one to tell the story. And they put so much money behind it, you know, and continue to, because, like, I didn't know, you know, I'm still learning. So, like, now that we are in the marketing phase, oh, my God, they put as much or more money into that, you know. That means that they're standing by it and that it's admirable. I wish I didn't have to say it's admirable because of the, you know, landscape, but it's really cool. I feel really supported.
Especially in light of the political and social situation we're in right now in this country, where not everyone is looking at our community or our communities in a very positive way, let's say. Can I tell you my favorite character?
Yes.
Eddie.
Eddie's a dear. Eddie's the heart of this.
You know, because she's trying to hold the family together in a very traditional way, but from a non-traditional character, at least for TV moms, she's working really hard to make this happen. She's my favorite.
Oh, yeah, she's a dear. It's well, I can't wait for people to watch what happens.
Yeah, we don't want to give it away. Can't give it away.
No, but I'm just excited that that character exists. Because we usually, when we see a brown queer or a brown butch female, there's a violent twist to it, or it's for a joke, for a laugh. I think Eddie is funny, but Eddie is the heart. I'm just so excited for Seram Sathaghi, who gets to play that character, you know?
Oh my God, the actress is just amazing.
Yes.
Okay, so before we wrap it up, the big question, are you guys coming back for another season?
You might have to call Starz and ask them, and then call me and tell me what they said. Because we have a writer's room that is not, like, it's a yellow light. We don't have a green light. So we'll see. I've stopped asking and just put my head down and work. Like, I've stopped asking because I'm just hoping. Now, I've asked the universe. I have all my candles lit. Literally right now, I'm looking at my candles. La Virgencita, Oshun, everybody. So I hope that we do, but I have not gotten any word or anything. So,
well, if we all collectively throw it out to the universe, hopefully.
Yes, please. Ask La Virgencita together.
Yeah, because five half-hour episodes. I mean, I didn't even finish the popcorn before it was over.
It's just 3 hours. It's a movie. It's like a movie.
And it's a great movie. It's great characters, great writing, great performing. Can't speak highly enough of it. And we wish you luck. And we're all keeping our fingers crossed that this we get more of everyone.
Thank you, Felix. I hope I get to talk to you if we have a second season.
I'm going to hold you to that, okay?
Yeah. Yes.
All right. Thank you so much for taking time to talk to us here. And I know you're very busy, but thank you again, Tanya Saracho.
Thank you. Ciao.
I want to thank everyone who contributed to the show this week. NPR TV critic Eric Deggans, the crew from NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour, and of course to Tanya Saracho from the show Vida. Starz is replaying the show on its streaming app, so if you haven't seen it, you can check it out there. This has been Alt Latino. I'm Felix Contreras. Thank you for listening.